Hi everyone, I'm Jim, I'm an alcoholic. You guys aren't tired of listening to me yet, huh? Somebody is. You ask yourself, why are you doing this? Why do you, besides sobriety, why do you do these things? And part of this series that I have, it talks about that in, on the last page. And so I thought it'd be appropriate to share a little bit about that with you tonight before we get into the meat and potatoes of AA. And it says, power beyond estimate. God in His wisdom has selected this group of men and women to be the purveyors of His goodness, and selecting them through whom to bring about this phenomenon. He went on, not to the proud, the mighty, the famous, or the brilliant. He went to the humble, the sick, the unfortunate. He went right to the drunkard, the so-called weakling of the world. While mighty have said to us, into your weak and feeble hands, I have entrusted a power beyond estimate. To you has been given that which has been denied the most learned of your fellows, not to statesmen or scientists, not to wives or mothers, not even to my priests or ministers did I give this gift of healing other alcoholics, which I entrust to you. It must be used unselfishly. It carries grave responsibility. No day can be too long. No demands upon your time can be too urgent, no case too pitiable, no task too hard, no effort too great. It must be used with tolerance, for I have restricted its application to no race, no creed, and no denomination. You must expect personal criticism. You must expect lack of appreciation. Common ridicule will be your lot. Your motives will be misjudged. Success will not always attend your efforts and your work with other alcoholics. But remember, in the exercise of this power, I shall not exact of you beyond your capabilities. You are selected not because of exceptional talent, so be careful always. If success attends your efforts, not to ascribe to personal superiority that which you can claim only because of my gift. If I had wanted learned men to accomplish this mission, I would have entrusted this power to the physicians, the clergy, lawyer, scientists. You are selected because you have been the outcast of the world, and your long experience as drunkards has made you, or should make you, humbly alert to the cries of distress that come from the lonely hearts of alcoholics everywhere. Keep ever in mind the admission you made that you are powerless over alcohol, but relief came to you because of your willingness to turn your life and will into my keeping. And then we get to step six, and this is where we change. The steps before, we admitted that we had issues and problems that had to be dealt with. And after admitting our wrong thinking and wrong actions, in step five, we're now ready to do something more than admit or confess. We now become ready and willing to have God remove the defects in our character. Remember, it's our character we're working on, not the other guys. Here's a good place to drop the critical attitudes towards others, the superior attitude towards others. You know, I always laugh when I hear alcoholics saying, yeah, that guy looked at me the wrong way, or he did something to me, and we forget how we raped and pillaged and fought and caused all kinds of problems. And we were the problem for many, many years, but as soon as it turns around onto us, we become very, very sensitive. Now we know how they felt. We must clean our minds of wrong thinking, resentment, false pride, anger, envy, jealousy, remorse, self-pity, greed, gluttony, sloth, etc. One of the biggest hurdles the alcoholic has to get over is resentments. Wow. What concerns us here is that we try to get rid of all these thoughts, including hatred and revenge. I don't think everything goes away. I used to ask my sponsor, you know, when I pray to God about getting rid of these things, but then, you know, down the road they pop up. Or they, he always says, well, sometimes they come back in a disguised form. You know, they come back maybe not black and white, but, you know, that little whisper in your ear, you know, that person might be thinking something. I don't know if anybody actually, maybe I'm wrong, but people actually go out and think about, I'm going to get a drink today. I think they might start out their day, and then next thing you know, they're fighting with somebody, they're arguing, they're it's hot, they're mad, they're tired, they're hungry, and they're just close enough to a drink that they don't think about it and they grab one. I don't know. I've heard that, but I don't know if that's true. We turn our will over to God and let His will direct us on how to patiently remove one by one these defects. This action brings a unknown feeling of moral strength. I don't know, whenever you do something good or you do something for someone else, it always makes you feel better about yourself. Well, for me anyways, I can't say about you. When I go on a 12-step call, or whether I go to the prison, or whether I go to county jail, or whether I go to rehab, or whether I just sit down and talk to somebody at the club, whenever I walk away from those things, I always feel better about myself because I've given away what was given to me so freely. And I always ask people when I first came in the program why they took time out for me, and they always said, just do it for somebody else. And then you understand. So, and it makes sense. I think I worry more about everybody else instead of myself anymore. You know, and sometimes almost to a fault. We find in the consummation of step 6 a new peace, a release from tension and anxiety, as we are now laying our misconceptions and defects of character in God's hands. In step 5, I finished with my sponsor. He told me, like the big book says, go home and get down on your knees and ask God to remove these defects of character that we discussed. And I did that. And that was the first time I was on my knees since I was in Catholic grade school, you know. And I made sure I hid. I didn't want anybody to see me. I didn't want nobody to know. I was actually praying, humbling myself before a God who I didn't really know or understand, but humbling myself into a power, in front of a power greater than myself. I think that made it a lot easier. I knew it was a power greater than me. I couldn't give it a name. I couldn't give it anything. But I knew it was greater than I was. We feel an intense humility that cries out for recognition and divine help. In our inventories, we started a new mental hygiene and spiritual house cleaning. I think I was with Andy Daniels and a couple other guys at a retreat, and we were all telling stories. And I told a story, and it was an outright lie. Outright lie. And we had talked about stuff like this. And I, the guys were all laughing and talking. I stood up and I said, I just wanted to tell you that that was a lie. And they said, don't worry about it. We all do it. But that's a good thing to admit. Because when you have to make amends, I heard somebody say that they do these 6 and 7 steps so they don't have to do the amends steps because they hate doing amends. So they clean up their act because they don't want to move on to that next one. And it's true. I mean, if you've ever done the 8th and 9th step, which we'll get in later, but it's a hard thing to do. And you don't really like to do it all the time. We become fed up with our way and reconcile ourselves to God's way of doing business. Our way didn't work. My way didn't work. We experience a desire to quit bluffing and honestly give God a chance to remove from our lives all that stands in the way of our usefulness to Him, ourselves, and others. you can't bullshit an alcoholic. So whenever you are dealing with one, whether he's been sober a long time, whether he's a new person, we can tell when you're lying, pretty much. I asked Loretta before I came here, are there any character defects that I should talk about that I don't know about? And she said, just go do your thing. She goes, I don't want to ruin your evening. Knowledge of our illness prompts us to turn to God for help. The alcoholic must pray. There is no standard form of prayer to use. Our remorse over past mistakes and a general desire to correct them will indicate how we shall pray. Asking God, who you can't see, feel, or hear, to take away the things that are getting me into trouble all the time, and then to turn around and believe it is the beginning of faith. It's a step. It's a big step. You know? I ended up getting a job working with young kids, and I had to stop swearing. I worked in a shop all my life, and every other word was an F-bomb. You know? And so I had to learn to do that. And A couple of times, I consciously made an effort to do that. And a couple of times I did slip. You know, maybe two times. That's the truth. And they always caught me, those kids. Mr. Jim. So it was a learning experience. And today I know I still do it and I shouldn't do it. I'm supposed to be better than I was. I'm supposed to be a better person than I was before. Andy says he don't steal as much. I don't go for that. I don't steal anymore. Because now that I'm sober, I got this up here. And if I was to take this book, I think it's a couple bucks, and say, I need that book. Kevin, he don't know. And I take it, that would bother me all night. That would bother me and bother me and bother me until either I came back and paid for it or I just stopped coming back because I felt ashamed. And so I have to watch my actions. I have to watch what I do. The old ways don't work, you know. I can give you an example. I took a chainsaw in to get repaired and a brand new chainsaw came to my house from that company. And I got a phone call the next day saying my chainsaw was repaired. I took the chainsaw that they had sent to my house back to the store. And I said, you guys made a mistake. You sent me a brand new chainsaw. All you were doing was repairing the one I had. And the fellow came out and said, hold on a minute. And he went in the back and he came back with this woman. And this woman had made a mistake and sent me a new chainsaw, and they had caught it. And they were going to take it out of her paycheck. And she thanked me for bringing it back. I didn't have to. But I told her I couldn't live with myself today. I can't steal like I did before. I sponsor guys who work in the shop, and they would take stuff from the shop, and I'd say, those are grounds for being fired. You're supposed to be better now. Stop doing it. And you won't have that, those little things that bother you at night that your actions caused. If you cut somebody off, or if you cut in line, or if you know, because it's all about me. If I do something, you know, to hurt someone else or put them out of the way, that's on me. That's not on them. They may do it 100 times, but that's not my problem. People may screw with me 100 times, say things like it said at the beginning of this step. They used to call me the Reverend at work because I didn't go drink with them on Fridays. And I told you the story about how I told them I didn't go drink because God didn't want me to, and they thought I was a Jesus freak, so they didn't bother me again. Which was great, power of God, you know. And since I've been 50, over 50, and I'm retired now, I don't have to explain myself to anybody, which is great. Because people, that's God. Remember who you're talking to, Miracle. Right? Practically everyone wishes to be rid of his most glaring and destructive handicaps. No one wants to be so proud that he is scorned as a braggart, nor so greedy that he is labeled as a thief. No one wants to be angry enough to murder or gluttonous enough to ruin his health. No one wants to be agonized by chronic envy or jealousy or paralyzed by sloth. Sloth being laziness, I guess. Of course, most human beings don't suffer these defects at these rock bottom levels. Hasn't it been self-interest that has enabled most of us to excesses, which will bring us punishment anyways? But when we face up to the less violent aspects of these very same defects, where do we stand then? We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Willingness to change. Look around the room and you see people who are always angry. Even after periods of sobriety. Why are they angry? What the hell's so important? You know? Maybe you didn't get your way today. If I acted like that in front of my sponsor, he'd call me a crybaby and tell me to go cry in the corner of the room. You know. Are we now ready to let God remove the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take all of our defects? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. Now we go on to step 7. The meaning of this step is clear: prayer and humility. No man can tell another how to pray. Each one has or works out for himself his own method. And if I say God, it's higher power for anybody that wants. Christ said, ask and we shall receive. What method is merely ask? We ask for. We ask for an understanding of this illness. To understand. You know, one thing about these character defects, and it's really scary. Our minds are scary places to be. Although we don't drink anymore, we start picking up other bad habits. And you see it all over the place. In gambling, in all kinds of other things. I know this is AA, but I just want people to be aware that sometimes our sick minds manifest themselves into other aberrations that maybe we don't want to deal with. It could be anger issues. We see people who are angry all the time. We see people who are the victim all the time. We see people who can't handle pain. Every time they feel a tiny little bit of pain, they've got to have it fixed somehow. Our society demands it, even though it will pass in a day. You know, emotional pain. This world, you don't get out of without pain. It's that simple. You are going to suffer. People say suffering's an option. That's bullshit. Everybody that lives will suffer in some form or another. It's how we handle that that we grow up. It's how we handle that that we get on with our lives and mature. People say to me sometimes, aren't you bored? And I say, these are the quiet times in my life when I regain my strength. Because there are times in my life when people die that it drains me. It takes a toll on me. Last August, my mom died. And I was quiet for a month. I had to reflect back on all the things that went on. You know. So, and I suffered. People say it's an option. It's not an option when you love. The other thing is, when you come in here, you end up trusting people again, and they are going to hurt you. But that's okay, because we love today. Before, we always kept everybody away because we didn't want to get hurt anymore. But in here, it's okay. If you love people, they will hurt you. But just know that those are things are temporary. You know, being in the moment, for an alcoholic to see the big picture is a hard thing to do. We're always so focused in on what's right in front of us that we can't see the big picture. So expect, if you're going to stay sober, that you're going to be hurt. That's the way it is. People die that we love very much, our friends, accidents. We just lost a good friend. I mean, there's many things that, and the longer you're sober, when you have these longer periods of a pretty nice living, when it does hit you, it's like a broadside. And so we rely on all the people that are around us, because we've admitted to our friends and our families our character defects. Just about everybody I sponsor, most of my friends know that I can be an asshole sometimes. Know that I have an ego problem. Know that any time I could fly off the handle and get angry. But they accept me still. They still love me. They still accept who I am. And that's one of the great benefits of sobriety, because they know that I'm working on it. They know that I'm doing what I need to do. So don't expect to come in here and not and be pain-free. Isn't it? The reason people go back out drinking is because they can't accept the world the way it is, so they want to change the world. They can't handle that pain. They want to run. They want to run, they want to run, and they want to run. They don't like responsibility. I've seen this happen so many times. And I'll talk about that in the seventh and eighth, or the eighth and ninth steps. That's what I mean about an understanding of this illness. This illness is very cunning, baffling, and powerful. Very patient. One drink can kill you. One drink is the same as a loaded gun. It will kill you. Because then it becomes harder to justify coming back to the fellowship. You know, I'll go back next week. I'll go back 2 weeks from now. Next thing you know, you ain't going back. It's the same with food. It's the same with money. It's the same with a lot of things that we do in our lives. So be cognizant of the fact that just because you're not drinking doesn't mean your disease isn't working full time, trying to get you into other areas that will eventually get you back to a drink. Be cognizant of that. We ask for His strength and help to arrest it. We ask for forgiveness for wrongs we have committed, protection from resentment, self-pity, selfishness, jealousy, etc. Wisdom and understanding to know His will. Spiritual and physical strength to execute His will. What's God's will? What's God's will for me today? For me, I know my God wants me to be happy. But He knows it's going to take work. It takes things, you know. And because I open myself up to His will, things are pretty good. When I start to fight with His will, when I start to bring my will into it, like, you know, wanting something or pushing towards something I really shouldn't have, I get in trouble then. I do. It's not God's will. Or if somebody calls and says, can you go pick this guy up and take him to a meeting? And I say, I'm really tired. But if somebody would have done that for me, I'd still be out there drinking. You know, one of I really admire these guys. People who sit up here and do these jobs are special people. They are following God's will. People who go on 12-step calls. People who answer the phones. People who do the work of AA, they're the special people. And hopefully the people that see that will get involved. And that's what God's will is. He doesn't get us sober so we can meditate ourselves into nirvana. He gets us sober so we can get back down on the streets and say to the suffering alcoholic, I'm here. You need help. You know, and the opportunities that are provided for us are amazing. We run into people on the streets, or friends, or family, and can you help? And every time you say no, you're not doing God's will. You know, if you can't do it, that's fine. But if you have the opportunity to do it, and you can do it, and you walk away from it, that's when it's kind of shaky. You know, and opportunities abound every day. Whether it's helping somebody across the street, whether it's sitting up at the hospital talking to Carol, whatever it might be, those are opportunities to do God's will. Prayer is our highest type of mental energy. It serves a threefold purpose. We ask God's help. We thank Him for recovery. We maintain our contented sobriety. I told you the aim of these steps is so that we have peace of mind. Not to acquire things, not to get 40 years of sobriety in a slip, but to have peace of mind. To be able to say that I'm happy today. I don't have everything I want. My wife has leukemia. I have heart disease, but I'm happy today. And I know that God's with me and that no matter what happens, good, bad, or indifferent, it's going to be okay. It always has been. Humility. This simply is the virtue of being ourselves and realizing how small we are in a big world full of its own trouble. Drop all pretense. We should not be Mr. Big Shot bragging and boasting. Shed false pride. Tell the simple, plain, unvarnished truth. Act, walk, and talk simply. Bill Wilson agreed with that. See, this is a tough one for me even today. See a little bit of good that exists in an evil man. Forget the little bit of evil that exists in a good man. Think clearly, honestly, fairly, and generously. The shortcomings we ask God to remove are the very defects in character that made us drink. The same defects we drank to hide or to get away from, these character defects stand between us and contented sobriety. They perpetuate spiritual illness. Recovery from alcoholism is dependent upon their removal. It goes on, it says, a divine type of surgery is suggested in this step. Humble prayers become the spiritual scalpels with which God cuts out the damaged portions. Complete surrender to God's will assures us of a painless, successful operation. Surrender of our defects and shortcomings is not the spiritless act of a defeatist, but the intelligent act of an alcoholic. To admit one's faults to another human being is not a sign of weakness, but it's a really good sign of strength because of the yearning to become better. Like I said earlier in the first couple steps, we aspire. We aspire to become better. Surrender of our defects and shortcoming is not the spiritless act of a defeatist, but the intelligent act of an alcoholic who wants to replace his fear and weaknesses with spiritual courage, understanding, strength, contented sobriety, and peace of mind. And then they have all list of character defects. Selfishness, one of mine. Alibis, one of mine. Dishonest thinking, one of mine. Pride, vanity, one of mine. Arrogance, anger, resentment, one of mine. Intolerance of others' beliefs. Impatience, unwilling to bear opposition. Envy, jealousy, phoniness, procrastination, laziness, self-pity, sensitivity, and fear, all mine. All my character defects. It's a tall order to get rid of all of them. But it's a lifetime of work. It doesn't happen in one day. It's a lifetime of work. And if you look at number 12, which is procrastination, I'll do it tomorrow, then it never gets done. So you might want to keep that one, because then you don't have to work none of them. We all want them removed. Perhaps in some cases we shall say, this I cannot give up yet, but we should not say to ourselves, this I will never give up. And that is all I got on those, guys. So if you got anything, let me know.
Thank you, Jim. Now we have question and answer. Anybody have any questions? You will have a question, you're right.
Thanks for a great talk. Something that caught my attention as soon as you started talking at the beginning was your sponsor telling you to go and get on your knees and pray. And you felt maybe embarrassed or didn't want anybody to see. Sometimes do you feel that that's a sign of shame, embarrassment, or even ego, that we don't want to be seen? How do you feel about that?
I was of the world when I was drinking, and so that type of action in front of other people, I always thought was a sign of weakness. And so when I did it myself, I felt the same way about myself. It was an act of a lie. And my sponsor always used to say to me, do it. Just do it. Stop thinking about it. Just do it. And whatever happens or how you feel afterwards, then you can talk about it and experience. But until you do it, it's not an experience. It's just conjecture. It's just philosophy. It's just whatever. And so we share our experience, strength, and hope. So because I've done it, I can share it. Okay?
Hi, I'm Bridget. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. Jim, thank you so much. This has been very enlightening. And what I wanted to ask you, you might have already talked about this in the previous weeks, but what you're reading from, is that something we'll have access to after this 12-step performance?
I gave a copy of it to Kathy Deeds. If you want to talk to her, she has a means of making copies.
And where is this from? Where did this originate?
This is from 1971, before the Steps and Traditions books came out.
Okay.
And there was a group of 100 people who were trying to condense the big book and the steps into a format so that they can use it for forums of this nature. Mm-hmm. And when I came upon it, it was willed to me from an old timer in the program who had passed away.
Wow.
This and many other things that you guys probably never even saw or heard about. But and I incorporate this whenever I work with a new person.
Mm-hmm.
So when I go over my steps or with the new person, then we sit down and we go over the same thing with Dustin or whoever else I'm working with at the time. What it does is when we're talking, a lot of times you're talking with someone and you kind of get lost in the conversation, and this helps to bring us back to the problem and the solution to it.
Well, I really, really like the width and breadth of it, too, because a lot of times in the program, we confine ourselves to talking about alcoholism, but as you inferred and you stated, we have a propensity to do this in other formats. It could be eating, gambling, shopping, and so I really enjoyed what you had to say today. Thank you.
Thanks, Facebook friend.
Any other questions?
You guys don't have any character defects.
It's coming together pretty soon. All right.
Got all the way through six, and all the way, almost through six and seven. thank you very, very much for coming here. It's great. And we'll have to talk to Kathy Deeds about getting a copy of all that.
So I gave her a full copy. There's also the 12 traditions in there. There's a whole.
Good. Great.
There's a whole format for the traditions.
So when you take somebody through the steps, you use this format?
The format I use. Because it's very simple for me. It's how I went through the steps. And like my sponsor always says, you don't argue with success.
That's great.
It's worked very well for me.
So what do you do when somebody kind of drags their feet? Do you have like a timeline that you're trying to take people through?
Depends on the situation and the person. Some people come in here and are so beat down that the best thing you can do for them is to build them back up. And then some people come in here with all the answers and they try to teach you how to stay sober. And that's when you use the, you know, the honest willingness type of thing to bring them into balance. It's basically, what we're trying to do is to learn to live a balanced life. And anybody who works with people in the fellowship knows pretty much where the guys are that they're working with. Some of us are really down. And we need that helping hand. And there's hope here. So I always refer to my sponsor, but I always thought he was yelling at me. He never raised his voice, but because it was so honest, it felt like shouting, you know. And it was because it was words I didn't want to hear. It's so much easier to just hide your feelings and hide away and stay away. But that's what gets you drunk. That's what gets you back out there. You have to take something like this, not keep it to yourself, but to share it with the people that you hang around with. We're a fellowship. We're a group of storytellers. It's who we are. We tell great stories. We love the stories we tell. We like to listen to the stories we tell. And through those stories, out pop these little things. You know, and when they pop out, oh yeah, you know, that makes sense to me. And I just because of being around for a long period of time, I have hindsight. I've seen what this does, and so I don't have to speculate. I can say this is what I've seen, and it works really well. The ones I've seen that go back out and drink again are the people who slip away. They just slowly slip away, you know. And sometimes we call them, and sometimes we call them on their crap, and they still slip away. But it doesn't mean we should shy away from ever calling them on their crap. If you see somebody that's driving off a cliff, please grab the wheel. You know, tell them stop. And if they hate you and they stay sober, better. That's the greatest thing in the world. I don't care if you like me, but I'll tell you what, if you stay sober, that makes me feel good. Way more than you being my friend, because it's God's work. That's why you're here. And I hope you do the same for somebody else. I hope you, if you see somebody doing the same thing, you know, you grab the wheel. Don't be afraid to, you know, to say things. If you get into the traditions, then you're going to say things, because there's a lot that needs to be said. Because it's a group. We're talking about a group now. We're not talking about individual working with an individual. So yeah, it's a wonderful thing to you know, have the conscience to say, you're being an asshole. you need to get your crap together. And you're not doing it because you're superior. You're doing it because you want to see them live sincerely. I have seen so many people die. My God. That went back out. It's and good friends, really good friends. And to be frankly honest about it, you know, people say, well, maybe they had to die for some. I don't know. All I can think of is I was hurt because of it, because I thought that it would go on, you know, and it didn't. So every time I start feeling sorry for myself over losing a friend in AA, there's always a new one walking in the door. And that's what this is for. That's what I got.
That's great. One other question. When you're working with people, do they do any writing on any of the, of all the steps and stuff like that too?
Yeah, the fourth step is always written down the first time. Usually if I'm on it the third or fourth time with a guy, we just sit and talk. But the first time, always write it down.
How about the other steps, like
the amends
steps?
On the amends steps, we write down the people
okay.
that we need to make the amends to. They usually come out in the fifth step, fourth and fifth step, so we write those down. I journaled for 20 years. I kept a journal of every day, and that really helped me because looking back, even 5 years back or 10 years back, the problems that were so doom and gloom were insignificant, and it made me realize that just because I have a problem doesn't mean it's the end of the world. But if I share it with people that are around me, everything passes. It always passes.
So do you suggest people journal?
I would suggest if you are struggling with day-to-day life in the fellowship, to write down every day before you go to sleep. It's like an inventory. Just even if it's something stupid, like I was mad at myself one night and I just wrote F you, you know, and you, but that's okay. I fell asleep, you know, and that was good. I didn't carry that in. You know, if somebody stepped on my toes or got in my way, I would write, I hate that SOB. I verbalized, and I would eventually talk it out with my sponsor. But if he wasn't there, and it's a trivial thing maybe at the time. But looking back, when I look back, I didn't realize how petty I was. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
I'm so petty. It's unbelievable. I had to learn to grow up so bad. You know, the people that I admired and their sobriety, they always told me, suffer, you bastard. We went through the same thing. You know, we all have to go through that maturing process so that we can get better. And we hate the ones who can't mature, they're gone. No, they have to get better. They have to if we want to live.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, I don't see enough people standing up during these steps talking the way that you spoke tonight about, you know, telling somebody their truth, not because you're taking their inventory, but because
everything we do out of love.
Right, and that's something that I don't know.
I will love you so much that I will tell you you're an asshole. Because
no,
I want to see you live.
No, that's great. I think that's absolutely terrific, and I agree with that. And I've been criticized myself for, I guess, loving too much sometimes, and expressing it that way. Is much better than I had before, so thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anybody else have a question? Jim, thank you again.
Thanks
very much.